Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm Christophe Madden, I'm your host, and I'm joined by the total complete crew. We've got Grace and Maka with us. Grace, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It was a busy week in Adelaide with the Tour Down Under, but back on ground in Melbourne for 2 days, I think, before.
And I think we can say there's no one busier than Mr. here, Maka, in that time of the year. How busy are you, Maka? How many days of rest are you getting?
You said you were doing events, and you said if you call that work, events are hard work. You've got to put a smile on your dial. You got to shake a lot of hands. You got to make conversation. Whereas all I do is talk into a microphone and then go hide in my hotel room after each day. So, you know, busy. Everyone's busy.
But you're on your. Yeah. I know. But like, don't be humble. You're on your feet for many days in January.
Outside
in the sun. You know, with your heart. Your SBS chill heart.
People are really nice. I think they you know what? I said to Susan the other day, the event staff, and I mean this, at Tour Down Under are actually amazing, and you get so well looked after, well treated. So a big shout out to Chloe, Jess, Hitaf, and the whole crew, because they actually are an amazing event.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky enough to do 11 of them, and not too many other events that treat you the way they do. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I also will point out that you're so very humble, my friend, because I know you're working hard. You don't want to admit it, but
no,
you are. Anyway, let's move on the actual cycling that we had. Tour Down Under. You're the man. You were the man on the ground, Maka, on this Tour Down Under. And Jevine.
Yeah, he delivered. He delivered. He said he worked hard for it. They forewent, you know, extra time back in Australia with family and friends to stay in Andorra. Why would you do that when it's 10 foot under snow? But really focused, really committed. So he came here with a goal to win it, and they set it up on the corkscrew. However, we thought that was it. We thought, okay, it's sort of done now. He's got a minute lead. His teammate and defending champ, Narvaez, was only 6 seconds behind him, but probably wouldn't challenge him out of respect. Narvaez crashes out the next day, or 2 days later, and then on the final day, or the second last day, another two riders drop out. He was down to two teammates on the final stage. So it never became nail-biting, but it begged the question, is anyone out there ready to challenge him and attack him, Maro Schmid?
They were in a vulnerable position.
It was a nice edge, wasn't it?
Like, that final stage in Stirling is really tough. And there were points where, the breakaway could have gone out. And if the wrong riders were in the breakaway, like, I think Luke Plapp was virtual GC lead for a little while there. And that, when you've only got two people working for you, that's a very vulnerable situation.
But if there's only two or only one, Adam Yates would be your pick, wouldn't he? And that's what I think Cal O'Brien said on the start line off mic, and I said to him, come on, what's going on? Are you guys going to lay down the gauntlet? You've got a little window here that you might be able to unsettle them. And he said, of course we want to try to. But he said, when you've got Adam Yates, Mikael Biao, who actually crashed out. He got taken out by a kangaroo, actually. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a moment.
That's a good teaser, Maka.
I didn't mean that. But, you know, he said, when you've got those sort of guys to be around Jay Vine, it's pretty hard to unsettle them, isn't it?
How important is that tour, that win for Jay Vine, setting up the season? Because we know the team roster is fully loaded at UAE, so he more than ever he has to find his place in the team, which he has totally has, and no disrespect here, but it's probably a constant battle for someone like Jay Vine to be inverted comma relevant in the team. You can't let your guard down.
No.
That's what I mean. So how important is him to score an early win, like as early as it comes?
Yeah, it's important. I think he's already quoted as saying his season finishes at the Giro. That's his big goal. João Almeida, I believe, is going there as well.
Yes.
Same team, obviously. So you
and
would
Vingegaard.
Presume Almeida
Vingegaard
will
is the
be...
Target.
Yeah, of course. Almeida will be the team captain. But Jay will be a good plan B and a good backup. And this could be his year, his opportunity to actually stand up as a GC leader amongst that team, which is in itself is something special. So, it's important.
Not just... Yeah, we've seen him obviously succeed a lot as a stage winner in the Grand Tours, but especially the Vuelta. But yeah, going after a GC position in a long 3-week tour is a different beast. And I think winning here, you know, getting through the team had some struggles, but he was pretty solid the whole 5 days in Adelaide. Yeah, it's a good sign.
And how important are the signs of bike? So, yes, there is the racing, but there's the role of a leader in the bus, in the hotel, at breakfast. It's a lot for him to learn as well as craft as a leader. When your number one leader, Pogacar, or Joao Almeida, second leader, are not here. All those are important soft skills, I guess, as well.
I think definitely. And as Macca mentioned, like, he had Adam Yates working for him. And that's a huge sign of respect. Like, Adam Yates has done incredible things himself on the world stage. And, yeah, just watching the last stage coming up into the finish in Stirling, and Adam Yates was on the front, Jay Vine on his wheel. Like, I think that sets him up as a leader in the team, and obviously he's got respect from his teammates there for what he can do.
Anyone else caught your eye during this tour down under?
Well,
other than the kangaroo incident, which we'll talk about it in a second.
No, I'll tell you what, I want to reference a writer from the women's as well. I know you guys did a pod in my absence last week. So two unsung sort of unsung heroes or underdogs, if you like, opportunists. Alessia Vigilia, I just want to mention her because I thought she's a rider that may not win a lot in her career. Maybe she will, and I hope she does. I think she deserves to. But she may not win a lot or big, but a rider like her is going to win somewhere, I hope, and maybe one big win in her career. And then Martin Buger, who won the King of the Mountains classification. He was in a break nearly every day, every single day. Stinking hot. He's come from Norway. I think he said it was minus 15 when he left, minus 20. It was 43 degrees on one day. So it's a shout-out to those riders that we don't ever really talk too much about. We talk about the winners. We talk about the riders who crashed out. But then there's these riders that are animators and that give us commentators something to talk about throughout the whole stage. I thought Vigilia was... I thought she was brilliant, actually.
So I was teammates with Vigilia.
Of course.
On FTJ Suez. Yep. And she... Yeah, she's a very strong rider.
Yeah.
She had some rough years when she was on FTJ, unfortunately. But when... I was very happy because I was commentating, of course, and she was the lone breakaway
rider. Stage one. Yeah.
Stage one. And you're sort of very thankful when the lone breakaway rider is someone that you know quite well. I had a fair bit to say about her, but she's a very strong time trialist and she's an opportunist and like she's smart. She knows her body and she, yeah. But it wasn't just stage one. She kept going. Well,
the circuit race at Tanunda, which was, by the way, that was raced.
Hard.
My God, that was raced. That was incredible. Yeah, it was really good.
But, yeah, it's so good to see her, like, sort of pushing. She's in a new team this year and going out, taking opportunities. Mm. I think she's shown that she can be a leader in that team now going into the season, which is awesome.
And the two I mentioned, both Uno X mobility riders.
Yeah.
So that team, you know, they got some versatility, which is good.
I've got one rider I want to talk to you about because we spoke about her last week. Is Amanda Spratt.
Yeah.
Last season, she announced the retirement with us, as we mentioned. But how was she on the ground? How was she entering her last TDU? A lot of people came to talk to her. You could follow this on the social media, that there was a lot of love for Spratty. But from your own eyes, because you followed Spratty all her career, pretty much. How was it for you to be there for those moments?
Yeah, it was cool. It was. I'll tell you a little thing, and she almost got emotional, and then I get emotional, and I didn't. But I filled in for Keno at Talking Tour one night. And it was Spratty and Ben O'Connor. So we did Spratty first. And I didn't know, but her whole family were there watching, listening.
Yeah.
And then she, because I said something about how important is family and the people around you being throughout your career, and then she mentioned them and brought it up, and she almost, she almost got emotional. Yeah, and obviously, I'm sure she won't mind because she's publicly mentioned it. Her dad, you know, had a rough trot. The last 12 months, his health, I think, is pretty good now, which is great. But he was there as well, both mum and dad. So. It's been an emotional probably last 12 months for Spratty. And she said, you know, some of the best advice she ever had was from Gary Sutton, who's been a great Australian coach and a coach that defected to the States and won medals, but a fantastic mentor to so many athletes. He said, surround yourself with good people. And he gave her that advice many, many years ago. So, no, she was good. She was good. She's lapping it up. Mm-hmm. And she said that. She's soaking up every minute of it. Which is why I guess she announced her retirement at the start of the season.
Yeah.
So she could get it out of the way, enjoy it.
And, yeah. And she needs a win at the Tour de France, if only because she promised me a pair of shoes if she wins at the Tour de France.
That's just selfish.
It's totally selfish, but hey, how cool are the little shoes?
What sort of shoes?
No, the little ones. You know, the team shoes, the little ones. So you just can't find them in
Australia. You can go to the Lidl supermarket. They're in the $2 bin.
No, they're not the same. You can't find them. You can't find them. And there's no Lidl here. So, you know, we can also talk about it. Now, Kangaroo.
Before we move on from the riders,
that's another teaser for me.
Yeah. Oh, the listeners are going to be on the edge of their seat about the Kangaroo.
Yeah.
But I want to mention in the men's race, Harry Sweeney, third place in GC. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we usually see him going for, the general classification.
Yeah.
And I think it definitely deserves a shout out because he sort of put himself in a different role to what he's used to. He's often a domestique, occasionally gets an opportunity to go after a result, but I think this would be a highlight for him in his career so far.
He's just stepping up, isn't he? Just margins each, like last year with Ben Healy. Remember the day he got the yellow? It was a team effort, and I don't think you could say we were even being biased. A lot of it was Harry Sweeney that propelled Healy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the plane coming back Sunday, and Tom Southam, the DS, was on my flight, and we had a quick hello as we were walking on, and I said, "You happy?" And he said, "Oh," he said, "we're more than happy." He said, "beyond our expectations." So exactly what you said.
So just
not that he wasn't capable, but that was a huge ride.
So just to bounce back on this, and does that mean the TDU can be this platform, this sort of stepping stone for younger riders to try new roles too, because not the whole roster might not be here. The situations are happening on the road, like the Kangaroo we will talk about in a minute. But I think we're overdoing the whole Kangaroo. But no, joke aside, it opens up opportunities for guys like Sweeney to just step up.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a bit of a different sort of tour compared to a lot on the calendar. Like there's... It becomes a race of seconds often. Like this year was the first, I think, the biggest margin
in
since
10 years.
2004?
Something, yes. Yes, I heard there was some stat. Yeah, it's a long time.
So it's usually a race of seconds and going after the bonus sprints and all this. So, we don't see that too often in tour racing.
Mm.
So it's a different format. But, yeah, there's definitely riders that step up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new year, fresh legs, I don't know. And then they continue to have a good season throughout the year. It's definitely something we've seen on the women's side, maybe not as much on the men's, but it's really cool to see Sweeney perform like that. I ran into him in the lift afterwards when he was just back from the final stage. And he said he was beyond happy with the result, but he wasn't sure whether he wants to take, you know, put himself in that
leadership
role too often. Like, I think he pushed himself a lot with the pressure of maintaining that position on GC and really going after it. But
Ben O'Connor said, it's interesting, and I think we all know it if you've raced, you know, at elite level, pro level. Ben O'Connor said something along the lines of riding GC for a Grand Tour is horrible. Mm. He said it's horrible. And by the way, me saying that is not criticizing Ben for saying that. Mm-hmm. I actually, he's right. And yeah. I was never good enough to be at that level. But even just a 1 week stage race or for 3 weeks.
Is it the step up? Is it the step up?
Oh, massively.
It's the pressure. I hated being a GC rider as well because you don't just have to perform on the days that suit you. You have to like push yourself every single day. Mm. If you're like often GC riders are not sprinters, and those days in particular are the worst because you can't afford to lose any time in a sprint finish.
You can't relax, can you?
You have to put yourself into situations where you're completely uncomfortable. The whole team is around you, backing you, riding, putting you in position all day, and you have to step up to that. And there's never an off moment. It's really, I hated it as well. Mm.
And when we say that, it makes you, when you think of Pogacar and how happy-go-lucky he is.
Because he doesn't know anything else.
Pogacar, he just does it. He seems to do it with ease, and part of his, part of his ability, arguably being the best we've ever seen, I think is that. Not just his physical, obviously his physical attributes, but his psychological attributes are just, So he's just like, oh, yeah, right at the front. Yeah. No problem. No stress. Happy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And some riders naturally, it comes easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
A lot don't.
Yeah. Now, it is time.
Skippy.
Kangaroo time. Actually, I would say may he rest in peace because we had bad news on the actual kangaroo.
We've heard the kangaroo broke its leg.
Yeah. And basically had to be put down. But kangaroo incident can only happen in Australia, I guess, statistically, but also, the way the country is formed. Two riders got injured, though. Mikkel Berg got a fracture in his hand, and Menno Hussing got a broken collarbone. It's not an isolated incident, because things happen in a race, but you were there, you commented on it. It's pretty weird when this happened, though, even though we are used to it in Australia.
Well, the first thing I said was, we were just having a short pause in the commentary because, for those of you who don't know, we do venue. I do the venue commentary. And so we do short little pauses, let the music play and, to give the crowd a break from our voices. Anyway, the crash happened. And so we jumped straight back on the mics to update everyone there. And
so a kangaroo came in to the peloton,
And we saw the aftermath, and then the replay, you saw the kangaroo had most likely caused the crash. And
it's not its fault.
No, it was hopping away from the scene of the crime, though. So, but I said to the crowd as a joke, but the images were being beamed around the world. We know that these images were going everywhere around the world. Imagine people overseas watching that. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have friends in Europe or around the world, and they're like, "Oh, kangaroos! Are they in the cities? Are they here? Are they there?" And it's like, well, they're at that bike race and they jump through the peloton. Like, you couldn't make it up. A World Tour race and a kangaroo taking out the middle of the peloton. It's almost hard to believe.
Iconically Australian.
It is iconically Australian. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that it ended up in, injuries from riders and the kangaroo not being.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not faring very well. But it's such a typical...
As a rider, you can't prepare for something like this. Or can you sort of be prepared for some sort of wildlife on the side? Or
no, I mean, we've seen in Europe, like, dogs or cats.
Three-legged dogs.
I saw a donkey. I was actually...
A horse. Strada
a horse,
Bianchi.
A donkey in...
a horse in France.
Gent Wevelgem. Yeah.
Remember the horse at the Tour de France that actually joined in the race? He jumped the fence and joined in the race.
Well, those images will be replayed. This incident from TDU will be replayed.
They didn't get... They just got image of the kangaroo,
hopping away,
obviously hurt. But we didn't see it coming into the peloton. We just saw the crashes afterwards.
True.
Although I've seen since, AI, people making AI images.
I'm sure AI can fill in the blanks.
I'm like, this is not quite right. I'm like, it's very, very bad.
That's
AI
the problem
images.
With AI,
But in terms of riders, you can't prepare for the unexpected like this.
No. You're not looking out for it, are you? It totally. So that was unfortunate for those guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, we take a short break, and then when we come back, we look ahead of all the cycling that is coming up, including a lot of it on SBS. Don't go away. Welcome back to the SBS Cycling Podcast. Now, we have a lot more racing happening down our shores as well in Victoria, since we are recording this podcast in Melbourne. Maka, you're heading to Geelong no later than in a few hours.
G-Town, yes. The final sort of piece of the January puzzle of cycling. And it's becoming an important one, isn't it? First one-day World Tour race of the year, of course, for men and women, Saturday, Sunday. But they wanted more than that, the mm-hmm. organisers, and Cadell did as well. And to entice the Europeans and non-Australian riders to stay longer. So we've got two Surf Coast Classics.
Yes, midweek.
So Wednesday, Thursday. But they've had to improvise because, sadly, because of the heat and the bushfires down the Otways, which is fine. It's just a bike race, so that comes second. So they've done a good job of creating courses, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pity that we can't, for the Surf Coast Classic in particular, I think it's a beautiful course. It was starting in Lawn, going up Dean's Marsh, coming back down onto the Great Ocean Road, and like that scenery is
stunning.
Some of the best in Victoria.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, because of the fires, they've had to reroute the course a bit more around Torquay, Geelong area. Mm-hmm. But it's still great to have a second race.
Yeah. So 136 kilometres, 0.5 for the women, and 174.4 for the men. You are also, Grace, going to commentate on the women's race. When we talk about how important these races are in the calendar, how important are these two in the Geelong sort of festival?
Yeah, I think...
For riders.
Well, it's great because obviously the teams are putting a lot in to come over here for a month of racing. The women have had since their Tour Down Under race and the race in Tanunda last week. They've pretty much had a week just training mm-hmm. now. So,
but just a question on that, on the Surf Coasts... and I'm putting you both, or probably you more so, Grace, on the spot. The Tanunda race for the women, the one-day classic, there was 220 points, I think, up for grabs, UCI points. Like it was one rank, one level below World Tour. Surf Coast must be somewhere around similar. So in terms of points,
it's significant,
and it's important.
Yeah,
obviously.
If you manage to win that race, that's a good haul of UCI points. And to start the year off with points like that, obviously, you know, puts you, the team, well in terms of, like, car position in the peloton. Yeah. Like, things like this actually count. Obviously, the World Tour points are sort of sometimes different to the rest of the UCI points. But yeah, I think it makes this whole trip over to Australia more worthwhile and incentive to the teams.
In that case, question for you two: should or are they the TDU and the Geelong Festival, so the Mapei Cadel Evans races, work together to make sure that they've got all the teams and all the big headliners and all the big hitters that they should have? And I'm not talking, I know some, like, the teams have to be here, but I'm talking about the roster within those teams. Should they, you know, are they working together to say, we want Pogacar, this is going to cost this, and it's going to stay for this?
I'm going to sit on the fence here because I work for both. Well, I work for both organisations and I rate both.
Yeah, okay.
But all I will say is there probably could be
a better synergy,
better cooperation. I think I can say
so
that.
So read between the lines.
Read between the lines.
Yeah.
And look, it comes down to the costings.
Yeah.
TDU, for the men at least, let's just focus on men for a second, because, I mean, the reason I say that is it's a six-day stage race. So you'd argue that for the men, TDU are fitting a big chunk of the bill.
Yes.
And fair enough, I guess. But when they're all out here, they have a right to say to Cadell's, well, you got to chip in something. And then for the women's, you got to chip in a bit more because we've only got, we're only doing, or you're going to, you know, maybe not half, but it's got to be, but it's business, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a trick, and they're two separate organisations, two state government run events effectively.
Yeah.
So they're in competition. It's hard.
They are in competition. Like, I think particularly that aspect, the fact that it's South Australian Tourism Commission,
yep,
Visit Vic, that are like major sponsors of each event. So they're basically saying, come to our state, we're the best. Mm. So it's hard to be completely aligned when that's where the money is coming from.
I knew it was a touchy question.
Well, it's tricky,
well,
it is, isn't
touchy. It? It's tricky. It's touchy.
Yeah, and it's been, I think it's been a point of, you know, obviously strong discussions for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always going to want to either pay a bit less, aren't you? As a business, if you're running it, if you think of them as two business entities, you want someone else to pay a bit more.
Well, if you were ticketing, the entry would be a bit different, but because it's, of course, free events, of course, it's a very interesting subject. We may or may not come back to it.
I put
this question in my bag, and I know it's one I can fire again at some point.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think if I can go a step further, and I won't say who, but a couple of people have said, like, TDU, the next step now is to get Pogacar.
Yep.
Right? Now, you couldn't pay him enough money. And I'd go another further step, and we're still missing Pauline.
Demi Vollering
and Capecchi. And then you've got the best of the very, very best. But how do you lure them out here? Is it money? Maybe. For Pogacar, no. He's making $50 million over the next few years.
I think if they get Pog's girlfriend, Urshka, then that could be an incentive. You need to. It's all the stuff on the outside. It's not the money.
I think it's some of the charity stuff, and he's got. I think he sponsors junior development. I reckon there's got to be an angle where they say, okay, we'll invest.
We bring your team.
We do something. Your charity becomes our charity partner. Or there's got to be a way that. So, TDU, you're tough. If you're listening, that's...
Of course they're listening.
I think that's Stewie O'Grady. There's the seed. Plant the seed.
Okay, let's go back to the actual racing. Can we sort of forecast or foresee who could win those two editions? It's always a hard one to pick, though.
I reckon it's one of the hardest ones to pick.
Will it be a sprint? Will it not be a sprint?
Sunday, men's and women's. Almost impossible.
Would it be a sprint? Would it not be a sprint?
It's so dependent on the weather.
Yeah.
Well, let's go women's first.
Yeah,
Ali Wollaston won last year.
Ali Wollaston won both the Surf Coast Classic and the Cadellevens Great Ocean Road Race. The Mappe Cadellevens Great Ocean
Road
Race.
Is she coming as a hot favourite again?
I would say she's the favourite.
Yeah.
But then there's the reason it's also hard to pick is because the Tour Down Under is the first race of the season, and there's a lot of riders that do that and they suffer at the Tour Down Under, and then they have a few days rest, they freshen up, and they're absolutely firing when they come and do a one-day race here in Victoria. So,
and of course, temperature, heat is a proper issue at the minute.
It's going to cool down for the weekend, which will be nice. It should be just sort of early low 20s, I think.
Yeah,
which is good.
But in terms of like the days to prep on the way, they are very high. We have temperature up to 43 today.
Yeah,
Are they impacting your race at the end?
It does a little bit. Depends how a lot of them have pulled up from TDU. Because it was pretty hot for the women's and the men's. Mm-hmm. Women have got more recovery because they were obviously finished earlier. I'm going to go. I think with a Kiwi, Fisher Black. Okay. Fisher Black. So a Kiwi won it last year. No, 2 years ago.
2 years Lawrence ago. Piffy,
Mara Schmid last year. Yeah, I think he's in. He had a pretty good final stage, Finn. So. He's pretty versatile.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the Sunday race. For the women's, Ali's still one of the favourites.
Okay, I was saying this name all Tour Down Under for the women. Dominika Vladacek, the Polish rider.
Yes, finished fourth.
She finished fourth, yeah. but she could have won.
She's a gun, yeah.
And she's good at those, like, pinchy climbs. She's probably a better, longer climber, but she's good at the pinchy climbs.
So Shalom
and
Brahil,
she's got a good sprint.
Shalom Brahil could be for her?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good pick, actually.
And she can also win from a reduced sprint, as long as Noemi Rugg isn't there.
Yeah. Yes.
But, yeah, I think I'm going to go with her just to be someone different from Ali Wollaston.
And
yeah.
guess what? For the first time ever, it would be on SBS.
Pretty cool.
That's a pretty
We're
cool
pretty
thing
happy
to,
about that, aren't we?
Yes. We are. We knew it was in the book for a little while.
Yeah, but, it was always going to happen. we wanted the race to build up a bit.
Exactly.
So it got to the standard yeah. that SBS expects, and now we're happy.
But it's fantastic because the Surf Coast and the Mapei, I should say, Cadel Evans Classic, are both men and both women on SBS and free to air.
And also, the Wednesday, Thursday races have never, I don't believe, have been streamed.
No.
Okay.
So they are, for the first time at least, SBS, courtesy of either on demand, or it might even be on check your guides.
But. Yeah, it'll be on the final hour of racing for both races.
Oh, great. Oh, so you'll be commentating those.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, great.
So fantastic. Any other news that are not Australian?
Yeah.
We've been a 100% Australian podcast. There's been a fair bit happening in Europe as well. The teams are sort of gearing up.
It's all a little tour is about to start.
Stage one is already done.
Yeah.
There's been some Spanish races.
Yeah. Yes. Michael Matthews actually
has had a win.
Mm-hmm. Has had a win. Actually, I'll tell you who else I saw on the plane coming home. The big boss himself, Jerry Ryan, and a very quick hello. But I tell you what, he doesn't miss much. I got on and I said, "Jerry, how are you going?" He said, "Good, good, David." I said, "You happy?" He said, "Yeah, very happy." And Michael just had a win overnight, so that's good, good, good for him because he's back from injury. He loves it. He loves it. So he's watching. Of course he is. It's his team. But, you know, he'd be forgiven for not being up on the finger on the pulse every minute of every day. But that was his comment to me.
On that, maybe a last question I would ask before we conclude this podcast. Jayco Alula being the Australian team, should they or are they, do you think, happy with their start of the season so far? Knowing what happened at the Nationals, didn't win the Tour Down Under, which is the home tour, so to speak. Are they happy? Or if they are, should they be happy?
I don't think they'd be super satisfied.
A stage win with the second overall, I don't think no one was going to beat Jayvine or UAE, I think, after Corkscrew. But to be, if we can just go back to the Corkscrew for a second, at the end of the day, you went, "Oh, wow, two guys ripped a minute out of them." They actually were only 15 seconds ahead at the top of the climb. So it wasn't a complete disaster for the rest of the race. But I reckon a stage win, if they had have won a stage win to go with their second overall, I think they could be pretty content.
Yeah.
Of course, they want to win. But, you know, I think now the Cadel race, they need a win. They won it last year for the very first time as a team.
Yeah, so. And do they go all in for Mauro Schmidt again? Probably the best bet.
I don't think it's hard enough for Plappy, Ben O'Connor. Who else have they got? That Cal O'Brien, a good day, can deliver, I think. It's a tricky one, isn't it?
So that win is super important for Jayco Alula.
Yeah, I think
again
so.
For the points, again for the placing of
I'd
the cars.
More so to keep your boss happy.
Oh, for the pride?
Yeah, I think so. Pride. Mm-hmm. I think pride, and you know, I don't think we should hide behind it.
Yeah.
Jerry loves to win, and I think it's more important that he's happy than the actual points. Mm-hmm. The points are important. We know they're close to the relegation at some point last year, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, he's paying the bills. So
I think last year that win by Mauro Schmidt really like that redeemed their
it
whole summer
their
in
jam.
Australia. Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully they can do it again.
Yeah. Okay, and then hopefully we'll be here to talk all about it because we will have a podcast from the event. Yes, we are.
Yes.
No, we should. But at least we'll talk about it next week in our podcast. And
one last thing to mention,
Yeah.
Simon Clark It's his last couple of races. Uh-huh. We will surely.
We try to catch him.
He's got an after party, retirement party in Geelong.
Okay.
Who knows? We might still be there for that. But that's what a career he's had.
So absolutely. We'll give him the biggest send-off we spoke next week. To him across his career over the years as well on this podcast. So he knows he's very much welcome here as well. Yeah. Thank you for coming. And I think you are heading toward the Geelong Macasso safe drive.
Yes.
And I'll see you there on Saturday morning.
See
and Grace, I'll see you there on Saturday morning as well.
See you there.
Thank you for joining us.